And, of course, we're with Catherine Austin Fitz. We're going to take your calls with her next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Her website, Solari.com, also financialpermaculture.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Catherine, how could this country, the greatest country in the world, be mired with so much infighting politically? I mean, it's just crazy.
Secrecy, George. There is, if you look at how much of our economy has been moved into covert or black budget, and how much we are keeping secret. I mean, surely you know, because you cover it on Coast to Coast all the time.
We do. We do.
We have a reality, an official reality, that are very far apart. And one of the reasons the country is so divided is because they are not dealing. If you gave every taxpayer a financial statement, not for the whole U.S. government, but for all the federal sources and uses of money within their county, you would have a revolution. I can't tell you how many counties are spending, you know, money for unemployment or for welfare when, in fact, you have the federal government paying contractors $100 to $150 an hour to do something that could be, you know, that could be literally teleported into that community and creating jobs for $25 plus health care. So, you know, if we sat down and really took a look at how the money works, whether it was on the central bank or the U.S. Treasury, or all the money going missing from the federal government, and took responsibility not to clean up the whole thing, but just deal with our county, you know, we would get some real change. But no person in America gets financial statements contiguous to the world that they drive around and see and vote for political representation. You know, and so it remains beyond their kin to sort of understand how to take action and get real change. But that change is going to come one way or another, because you can't continue to, you know, you can't continue to eat significantly more than you're growing. And that's where we are.
When I was younger, if you lined up a Democrat and a Republican and asked them each who they were, I had always heard that the Democrat probably would have said, I'm for social programs, I'm for spending money, I'm for this, I'm for that. And the Republican would have said, I'm for helping corporations and stuff like that. Where the Democrats were always pushing, they're for the working person. The Republicans would always talk about corporations and stuff. Is that accurate today?
No, I think both for corporations.
Both of them.
So, I really think that you have a push to centralize the economy. You know, here's the thing. Chuck Schumer really said it in early 2017 when he said, the president of the United States cannot buck the CIA. He has to do what they tell him. And basically what he was saying is the president works for the CIA and the CIA runs the country. You know, and of course the question is who tells the CIA what to do?
They said that about Kennedy, and look what happened to him.
To a corporate, you know, to the economic interests and the corporate interests that are driving the train. But, as I said, getting back to the red button problem, everybody in America wants their check, and they don't want to look at the carpet under where, you know, what it's taking to get that check. And whether it's loose monetary policy or loose fiscal policy, we have never been able to create a political constituency for running the country on a responsible financial basis. And that's what scares me about the bipartisan nature of a Republican Senate and a Democratic House, because the question is, you know, the way they can get a successful compromise is just to agree to spend more.
Let's go to the phones. Enjoy our listener questions, Catherine. Let's start by going east of the Rockies. Gabriel is with us in Fowler, Ohio. Hey, Gabe, go ahead.
Hi. I wasn't so certain that there was such a switch from Republican to Democrats because of the animosity that a lot of people have towards Trump. Because as I'm a Republican and I voted for a Democrat governor for Ohio, even though the poor guy didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because he had more credibility. He also was more constructive and industrious when he was an officer versus the one that got in. And when I look at other Democrats and I see all these young women that are getting in out in New Mexico and that, a lot of them actually share some of the things Trump believes in, you know, as far as like immigration, maybe modifying the policies, keeping out the sanctuary cities, and somebody doing something with ICE so that they're not going after innocent families and indiscriminately doing this. But I think there's just an overall change, and to say that that change is based on, again, the animosity towards Trump might not be a perfect perspective.
What do you think of that,
Catherine? Oh, I agree entirely. I think there was a real response after 2016 to say we want people who are going to really dig in and work hard at the nuts and bolts of governance. And you've seen candidates on both sides, but I think the Democrats particularly have done a good job of bringing to the fore people to do that, including young people. So I agree with you completely.
What do you think of this immigration? I mean, on one hand, I feel for people who want a better life. I mean, there's no doubt about it. When they live in squalor and they want a better life, they want jobs, they want to make some money, I can understand why so many people want to come to the United States. On the other hand, we need laws. We just can't let the floodgates open and just have people coming in all the time without regulations and laws. Where do you stand there?
Well, I think you have to have a relationship between what your laws are and what you're really doing. There has to be a balance. So I agree we need to have immigration laws and we need to enforce them, which is difficult to do. I also think you can only bring in so many, you can only introduce so many people into a culture at, you know,
any given time.
Speed
sure. In the 20s, we needed people in this country. We didn't have enough people.
When you bring too many people too fast, you create an incoherent culture and an incoherent population. I will say this, George. I just finished publishing our second quarter wrap-up called The Rise of the Asian Consumer. And while a lot of the media is focused on immigration of people coming from Latin America, I would say the immigration that's causing the most impact, both positive and negative, is Asian professionals. So we see significant, as we insource a lot of the manufacturing back to the United States, we're swinging in a lot of highly educated professionals, in particular from Asia.
Sure.
And they are. In many respects, it's the wealthy, well-educated immigrants that are causing the most dislocation in many of the big cities and those areas.
Well, they're the ones that want out of their respective countries to come here.
Right. Well, I think a lot is being done right now, and this included the changes in the estate tax, to make America attractive to people from all around the world. You know, we continue to benefit from immigration that really fuels the entrepreneurial nature of the economy, a lot of the innovation, a lot of the science and research. So, to me, immigration is here to stay. And one of the United States' competitive advantages, it's, you know, for hundreds of years, it's been able to attract the best and brightest from around the world. That's not going to stop.
No. Let's go to Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George and Catherine.
Hi there.
Hi, Wayne.
Yes, hi. Catherine, I'm concerned about the present position of the reserve currency of the world, which is the dollar. The Taj Mahal won't even take dollars now. The Russians and the Chinese have a $400 billion 30-year deal for the Russians to deliver gas to China. That's going to be conducted in wands and rubles. The whole world is moving away from the dollar as a reserve currency. My question is, how long do you think the reserve currency will actually last in its present form? Because there's a bipartisan public policy organization called the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. It's an independent, nonprofit, bipartisan organization. And they say that this tax cut is really like $5.8 trillion over 10 years. So that's going to really destroy the middle class in a short amount of time. And what do you think about that, too?
Well, I would say that the middle class is getting being squeezed by the debasement of the dollar from the time the Federal Reserve went into existence. So if you take a look at any chart of the debasement in the dollar, it's been a steady march, but there's no doubt that it's accelerating. The Economist had a great piece several years ago on the dollar. It called it dangerous and dominant, and I think that's where we sit. There's no replacement globally. There's no currency, not the euro, not the yuan, that can begin to offer the liquidity or the depth of market right now that the dollar does. The challenge is that for many different reasons, including the insistence of the United States on getting its way in a variety of different ways, and you see that come out in the sanctions, you're watching more and more countries around the world try to create alternatives to the dollar. They're trying to create payment systems. They're trying to create alternatives to SWIFT and the correspondent systems to really move away from the dollar. And that's going to continue to happen. And the question, of course, is when and if will the dollar lose reserve currency status? The answer really, Wayne, is a military question. How long can the United States enforce its will through military means? We saw Secretary Mattis the other day say the U.S. is going to have to adopt offensive space weapons. I would say they probably already have, but that's basically a signal that the military needs to be sufficiently ahead of the competitors to enforce its will to maintain the reserve currency. And so how long it can do that is really a military question, and your guess is as good as mine.
Not quite Christmas yet, but let's go to Seattle, where Mr. Grinch is standing by. Hello there, Mr. Grinch.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
You're very welcome.
My question for Catherine, well, first of all, I'd like to say God bless both of you for doing what you do.
Well, and, thank you. Thank you.
Keep on doing it. And for you, George, praise God and pass the ammunition. That is the info ammunition.
Yes.
But for Catherine, are you familiar with Walter Burian?
Yes.
And his theories on being able to totally reduce or eliminate taxation for the American people using the government funds that they've accumulated over the...
Well, I think what Walter is saying I agree with the gist of many things Walter is saying. The specifics we differ, but essentially what he's saying is if you dig down and really understand the sources and uses and the assets of government in your county and in your place, there's a lot more money than anybody realizes. And if you look at how the governance system really exercises control financially, it works a lot differently than you think. And if there's any action the American people could take to bring about a revolution, it's to create local transparency, particularly in the small business community, about how the assets and the sources and uses of government money work in their place. There is, Walter always points out that there's a consolidated annual financial reports, the so-called CAFRs. There's a lot of disclosure available if we want to avail ourselves of it. And there's a lot more that can be figured out. So financial transparency by county could really bring some remarkable opportunities and changes if people would decide to finally take a hold and use that information to re-engineer government and to get the cash flows back near the law. This is going to come up in the pension fund. We have real indications of underfunding of some state and local pension funds. And of course, there are questions about how the federal government is going to continue to meet Social Security or military pension funds. And the reality is, if you have $21 trillion missing from the federal accounts and you handed out $24 trillion of loans or gifts to banks during the bailouts, and other financial shenanigans, the question is, how come there's not enough money on the pension fund?
Right.
It's a very good question. And I think, some of Walter's work may come to a wider audience at the time when the pension funds really get debated out.
Catherine, every year I interview some folks from the Fair Tax Committee who are pushing for a use tax with vouchers to the poor because they can't afford things like that. And it's not a bad idea to, you know, tax based on goods purchased where people get 100% of their money minus Social Security and Medicare that you put in for. Not a bad idea. Well, do you really think we'll ever get to the point where we'll have a major tax reformation?
George, here's the thing. I liken it to a farmer who's milking a cow and there's a hole in the bottom of the bucket. I'm not inclined to pay more taxes while the hole in the bucket is operating. So, for example, you know, the U.S. pension funds have bought $5 to $10 trillion in treasury bonds, but there's $21 trillion going out the back door. If you look at that in a very simple way, the pension funds have become a laundry, or the government has become a laundry to basically transfer money from pension funds out, you know, into the black budget while delivering back an IOU that basically is a liability of the pension fund beneficiaries who are also taxpayers. So when people talk to me about more taxes, before they'll talk to me about more transparency about where all the tax money is going and the extraordinary corruption at the federal level, you know, my attitude is I don't want to hear about more taxes. I want to hear about more transparency about where tax money's going.
Exactly. Nancy's in Victoria, Texas. We'll get her in before the break. Hi, Nance. Go ahead.
Hello. I got a question for the guest.
Sure.
Okay. After what happened of some of the potential Democratic people that lost their election, for example, Beto O'Rourke here in Texas,
yep.
A lot of people are pointing out that some of these candidates like Beto could run for 2020 presidential election against Trump, and I wonder what is her reaction.
All right, let's get your reaction to that, Catherine. They probably don't have enough name power, but go ahead.
I George, I'm with what you or one of your guests said earlier. I don't see any candidate right now on the Democratic side.
Nope, not
that
yet.
That looks like an attractive presidential candidate. You need somebody with sufficient experience.
And well-known. You got to have that name recognition.
And I just don't see them. And I think the Democrats face two challenges. One, they have a lot of people at the national level who need to be moved aside. And two, they have a lot of bright, young, capable people. They need to move them up and give them experience. So if the Democrats are smart, they'll get the older generation moved out quickly, and they'll move up a whole group of people and give them this 2 years, you know, at least a year to season them and,
sure.
and create a field that could be attractive candidates.
You need that John Kennedy-esque type look and feel and attitude, and I just don't think they have that yet. Catherine, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls for Catherine Austin Fitz. Next hour, we'll talk about premonition on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, how do people get the Solari report? What's
just
the best way?
Solari.com, and we have lots of great free stuff. And then if you want the wrap-ups or you want the subscriber content, just go to the store and subscribe. You can subscribe monthly, semi-annually or annually, and you can be all digital or digital plus the hard copy. So there's just lots there for everybody.
It's a great report, and again, it's through Solari.com, Catherine's website, which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Was there anything about the midterms that really excited you?
I found it very interesting to see the president go out on the campaign trail and at the rallies really try and talk about some of the substantive issues. I was disappointed that, you know, the issues that I love to talk about, like the missing money, didn't come to the fore. But I do think there's a real effort on the part of the candidates that one of your callers was talking about, very interested in nuts and bolts, to really listen to people and get down to the real problems, and some of the national campaigns too. So I do absolutely see improvement, George, in transparency. and some real accomplishments in the last 2 years. I don't know if you noticed, we had Bill Gates come out a couple days ago last week and say Common Core had failed, and you can give the president a big gold star to help. I think he made a significant contribution to getting Common Core killed. It was one of the issues in the heartland that was most, had most infuriated people against the Democrats. So I see more attention to nuts and bolts issues. And again, I would just like to see a lot more transparency. And I compliment you for the contribution you have made to try and bring transparency, particularly to the black budget. That's where we need transparency.
Oh, deep, deep. And someone like you who has the guts to talk about it, because, you know, without guests like you, Catherine, you know, it's not a show. And you've been able to do that for us. First time caller Leland in Spokane, Washington. He's up. Hi, Leland.
Good evening. How's it there? In New York, they have this an exemption for the Real ID. And the Real ID 2020, it's a biometric photo of your face.
Huh.
And every state has to be in compliance with it by 2020. And a couple states have extensions, and they have to be in compliance by 2024. I think there's only two. As far as I know, Washington's one of them. But in New York, they have a religious exemption, so does Pennsylvania. And the religious exemption in New York is it's a 1520 filed to the Department of Licensing, you know, where there's a girl there, her name is Victoria, and she's applied to get a driver's license without the biometric photo, but the state won't let her, but they have a state law, and it's the religious exemption state law, and it's a form 1520, and there's two qualifiers for it, and one of them is you have to be black car Amish, and she's black car Amish, has been all of her life, and she wanted to be able to drive so that she could just do commerce, but the state won't give her the license.
They won't do it. Wow.
And right at the moment, the state's on break, the legislator, until after elections and whatnot. But at any rate, in India and in China, they already have it where your ID is on your phone, and you can't really do any commerce or anything without your phone.
Jeez, sounds like the sign of the beast, Leland.
Well, it sounds like it's coming this way, you know, and there's only like two states in the United States that have a religious exemption.
See, I know the TSA is requiring states to be compliant with the driver's licenses for TSA purposes to get through security. But I guess they keep changing things, Catherine, huh?
Well, here's the problem. You have government, whether it's the state governments or the federal government, pushing to use digital technology for more and more central control. But it's a one-way mirror, George, because as they get more control and more surveillance powers, you know, they've basically torn up the laws related to federal transparency, federal accounting. So if the federal government is free to demand tax money from us, spend it secretly without reporting to us on what they're doing and how they're using the money, and then to proceed to, you know, impose more and more surveillance and more control, you get a real breakdown in the balance of power between the individual sovereign human being and government. And I think your caller's right. This is going the wrong way.
Big time. Sharon's in Crane, Missouri. Welcome to the show, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi.
I deeply love my country. And I deeply love and revere the Constitution of the United States. But I am really frightened for my country. And I would like to know from your guest, how do we keep our sovereignty and yet still participate in this almost global takeover without losing ourselves?
That's the $64,000 question, Catherine. How do we do that?
Well, I think there are many things we need to do, but step one is to bring transparency to how the money works. If you look at the economy of the country and the relationship of the economy with the federal budget, We are way outside the law in terms of how we're spending the money federally, and we need to bring transparency to that. There's, as I said, there's 20, if you go to missingmoney.solari.com or go to solari.com, there's a link to the missing money page at the bottom. There's $21 trillion missing from the federal government. It's part of what I call the financial coup d'etat. And if a group of people can shift $21 trillion secretly out of the U.S. government to whatever they want on a secret basis, which is now the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board is now saying it's policy that they can do it, then there is no republic and there is no constitutional form of government. There is no law. It's completely lawless. So, but step one to do something about that is to bring transparency to it. So, and of course, you don't have to bring transparency to the whole country. If you just bring transparency to how the money works in your county, it's quite amazing. You can make money turning this around. It reminds me of what H.L. Hunt once said, George. I don't know if you remember this quote. He said, if this country worth saving, it's worth saving at a profit.
So true.
Get all the small business people together, figure out how the money works, and figure out how you can get the money back into a lawful position in a way that makes money for small business and creates employment locally.
I think in the long run, Catherine, we're going to work it out and we're going to be okay. But as I said
too
last night, it's going to be a bumpy road. Hold on, don't fall out, but we're going to get there.
George, I'm an optimist, but, you know, I believe in the story of Gideon. I think the Midianites are going to kill each other.
Let's go out to Brighton, Michigan. Brett's with us. Hey, Brett, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, big Wolverine high.
Hey, I had a little farm near Fowlerville, not too far from you.
Yeah, really?
Yep, long time ago.
Well, yeah, man. Well, you're going to have to come back and reestablish, man.
Yeah.
I know a lady. We used to raise the Royal Lipizzan horses out in Davison, Michigan.
Ah, that's a great area.
Well, George, you've really hit some hot buttons here. As a combat veteran, I'm not at all excited with the fact that the Israeli Mossad CIA operates the global opium heroin drug trade out of Afghanistan. And a group of veterans, even out of Michigan, Veterans Today, I think the article appeared 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Opium, the real reason for the Afghan war, and we know that Pat Tillman was murdered. He observed what he observed, recorded it in a journal, started jawing about it. The next thing you know, he's murdered by friendly fire because he wanted to go on a lecture circuit when he got home. Okay? And the alibi that was given by U.S. Gov, Pentagram, is he considered himself a celebrity soldier. I don't think so. So that has to be shut down, obviously.
Well, let me tell you, you are right. When the Taliban, strangely enough, Brett, and as you know, and Catherine, was running Afghanistan, the production of the poppy seed, which is used in heroin, was minimal. When we went back in, it went up through the roof. And I have heard that we have the greatest military in the world, but we've got some soldiers guarding those poppy fields. Brett, have you heard that?
George, what happened was Omar Mohammed, he was the head guy of the so-called Taliban. In, I think it was the spring of 2000, they totally destroyed the opium, heroin, poppy fields. Totally destroyed them. And that was that was a year before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the money issue, George, is really crucial. There is no federal charter, U.S. Constitution provision for a private central bank operation. Even Vladimir Lenin, way back when, declared publicly 90% of establishing communism in any country is the establishment of a private central bank. Now, I want to ask you, George, how is it possible, and Catherine, how can a Talmudic Shabbat Lubavitch rabbi, Dov Zakheim, become the Pentagon comptroller and chief financial officer and retain that position for, I think 20 years?
See, I can't answer that, Catherine. Do you know names?
I think it's Australia just had a very interesting debate and reaffirmed their law that you couldn't essentially hold a major political position. You couldn't be in the legislature in Australia if you were a dual citizenship. And I think if you look at the federal government and the Congress, we have been seriously compromised by dual citizenship. And, you know, certainly for anybody running the finances of DOD as trillions of dollars are going missing who has dual citizenship, that is, to me, a very serious conflict of interest and ought to be stopped.
If the American people truly, truly knew the things that were going on under the table, how upset do you think, Catherine, they would be?
I think they would be seriously shocked. You know, it's extremely hard for people to fathom psychopathy at a political level. And if you look at the extent, not just of the financial corruption, but the, you know, the sexual and cultural corruption, I think they would be deeply disturbed.
Let's go to New Jersey. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Something we need to go through, George.
Let's go to New Jersey now. Greg's with us, east of the Rockies. Greg, go ahead. You're on with Catherine Fitz.
Real quick, George. First of all, Catherine, always a pleasure to hear you. And thank you for mentioning a name we don't hear enough, Greg Palast. We're going to have him on again, George.
It's been a while. I'll check in with Tom and Lisa.
Greg Palast has been doing great work on voter fraud. Great work.
I'm an IT guy in Manhattan. Every time people bring up the Russians stealing the election, I go, Google search Greg Palast, please.
He's a good guy.
I have to say, a comment and a question. A comment made in 2008 by another great Philadelphian, Noam Chomsky, when he saw President Obama and his now financial advisors all gathering, including Larry Summers and Bernanke and all them. Professor Chomsky said, of course, you know, ironically, gee, he has all the criminals in one spot. Where's the police? Oh, no, that's the future cabinet. And Mr. Trump, if you worked in IT in Manhattan, George, you'd know he's run by a guy named Mr. Mercer. Right, Catherine?
Robert Mercer,
the financier off of Long Island?
I've heard that name before.
Not exactly altruistic, okay? He's the guy that bankrolled a lot of Trump's campaign, along with other billionaire guys who all got the tax break, if you will.
He's the Republican George Soros, I guess.
George Soros is small time compared to Mercer, all right? All these guys, these are the guys at the breakfast after the tax cut the next day in Manhattan.
I'm just going to be a bad guy and interrupt you for a second. If you look at Soros in the 2018 midterms, he spent about $17 million. Mercer was much lower than that. The number one was $113 million, was Sheldon Adelson.
From Las Vegas.
If you look at the big numbers, Mercer is way down on the list. Go to Open Secrets. You can look at the top donors in any election cycle.
Catherine, we've only got about a minute left.
Yeah?
And let me give you the platform. How do you see us in the next 2 years?
I think there is a real danger that the corporations are continue to get Congress and Senate to do their bidding in a way that I don't think is going to take the economy in a good place. So I go back to nuts and bolts leadership. Anything we can do at the state and local level to start to bring accountability to how the federal, state, and local government works is so very important. So this is trench warfare, and it's going to take every one of us.
Absolutely. Catherine's website, Solari.com, financialpermaculture.com. That is her thoughts of a community banding together to really build. And one day, Catherine, we may have to all do that, don't you think?
George, the next 10 years is going to be wild, so just hold on to your pants and do your best.
Don't fall out of the... roller coaster, as we say. Catherine, thanks again. Yeah. Always a pleasure to talking with you, both in our news segments and as a couple-hour guest. You always do a great job for us. Catherine Austin Fitz. Up next, we're going to talk about premonitions on Coast to Coast AM.